You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and I can't believe that 2024 marks 10 years of podcasting. Over the last decade, I have had the pleasure of talking with hundreds upon hundreds of passionate outdoors men and women who share the same excitement for hunting as I do. Whether you hunt public lands or private property, shoot traditional archery equipment or high-powered rifles, we all have one thing in common. And that's our love for the great outdoors. This year, I plan on continuing that tradition and bringing educational and entertaining content to your ears. Thank you for your continued support, and I hope you all have the best seasons of your life. Good vibes in, good vibes out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Tethered Wasp, Vortex, Code Blue, The Woodman's Pal, Huntworth, and of course, Full Sneak Gear. Today, we have a returning guest all the way from Kentucky, Mr. Tom Waters. Tom, how we doing, man?
Doing great, Dan. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, I'm living that dad life right now, and I'm living it to the extreme.
Yeah, you got the young ones where you don't have any time to rest at all.
Yeah. Hey, how many kids you got?
I have four, but they're all grown. Yeah. So I'm an empty nester, which is really fantastic. You'll enjoy it.
Someday. Are you a grandpa yet?
I am. I've got a he'll be 14 next month, so I've got a 14-year-old grandson.
Oh, nice. Nice. Does he take any interest into hunting at all?
You know, it's funny you ask. I have tried to encourage but not push, right?
Right.
And the step we're in right now is he's in the NASP, the National Archery for Schools.
Okay.
That program. So he enjoys hunting with the bow. He's shown some interest in shooting a turkey, but I think he's kind of got Disney-fied like most of these kids. He's not interested in shooting a deer.
Yeah.
And I'm working on him.
Yeah.
I'm working on him.
Yeah. That's one thing that not just when it comes to hunting, right? I think when it comes to hunting, these kids – they watch their Paw Patrol. They watch all these other, you know, like you said, Disney-fied everything. But one thing that I make clear is if you're eating a chicken nugget, a chicken has to die. If you're eating a cat, like a hamburger, multiple cows are dying to make your hamburger. So animals are here for us to enjoy and consume. And yes, wildlife can be pretty. And it can be interesting, but also, you know, especially domestic animals, right? I mean, they are born to die, basically. So,
yep.
So, yeah. Dude, do you follow NCAA basketball at all?
You know, I do. And I mean, it's a religion here in Kentucky, right?
It is.
But it's, we've been horrible. I'm more of a Louisville fan than a UK fan.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I kind of have fun when UK loses. So that's been the highlight of the tournament so far. But yeah, we're horrible. But yeah, who are you on this year?
Well, I mean, Iowa Hawkeyes. I'm from Iowa. So everything the only college sports I really follow is, anything Iowa athletic. And then I dabble in just a little bit of pro football, but not much. It's just the Hawkeyes. You know, we don't have any pro teams in Iowa, so it's hard for us to, you know, but here's what I will say is this Caitlin Clark girl. Everybody's talking about her. And here we are on a hunting podcast getting ready to talk about a woman's basketball, right?
And, I love it.
And it's awesome, right? I mean, she is an absolute – she's dominant when she steps on the court. But I've never seen an impact from any athlete, especially in the state of Iowa, other than like Caitlin Clark. They are scheduling – like tentatively, they give two dates. So for my son's basketball tournament, that happened on Friday. If Iowa played on Friday, we were going to play on Saturday. But because Iowa played on Saturday, so they are scheduling events and changing dates and times around when the Iowa women's basketball games are being played. And that blows my mind because that has never happened in my life. And so that tells you how many people are interested in watching her play basketball. It blows my mind. And so the whole thing, like for me, from a sports standpoint, and I know there's probably guys getting bored right now listening to this, but what I will say is, what's going to happen when she is gone? Will that momentum stay for women's sports, or will it kind of recede back a little bit? But I will say this: women's athletics, especially wrestling, right now is absolutely exploding, and I think that's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. I have three daughters, and I love it. You know, I'm so old, I played high school and junior college basketball. When I played basketball, Dan, the girls' high school team, it was six.
Yep, six on six.
On three. Yeah, and they wouldn't pass half court because they thought they weren't athletic enough to be able to play that game. And, I mean, it's I just love the way that it's changed. And she's amazing. She's in national advertisements, like for State Farm. Yeah. I mean, I'm just happy for women's basketball because it's it's an important thing, those opportunities.
Exactly. And she's doing, like they, on the last game they played, and I believe their next game that they play this week is at Carver Hawkeye Arena at the University of Iowa. And they put her number and a little logo from where she has shot the furthest three-pointer. And it is way out there, and she does it consistently, which blows my mind. You know, she's gonna pass it. Nope, pull up three, and swish, and the crowd doesn't even cheer anymore. They're just like, what's going on, right? So, it's pretty cool to watch. And I will admit that I've been watching a lot of Iowa women's basketball because of Caitlin Clark, man.
Absolutely, she's must see TV. I agree.
Yep, absolutely. You know what else is must see TV? Well, it's not really TV. Whitetail hunting. Like I was watching my kids play video games last night, and I was sitting on this part of the couch that I always sit at because I have a great view of five of my mounts. Five of on this wall, I put my top five biggest deer, and I just sit there and I can look at them. And my daughter was like, "Do you remember all of these hunts?" And I'm just like, "Sweetie, don't ask questions that you don't want answers to." Right. Cause I could literally talk for hours and hours about each one of these, you know, like the trail cameras leading up, what drainage he was in, what wind direction I needed, what my access routes were going to be. And so, I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool.
I think that's what people don't realize a lot of times is the trophy is not about looking at the antlers. It's all the memories. And the passion and the work, man. And it's just great. It's great to have that.
How long has it been since you've been on the podcast?
This will be, I think it's like 3 years.
3 years. Oh, yeah. It's been three years since we've talked?
I believe so. Oh, yeah, wow. I think it might be two, but I know it's at least two, but I think it's three.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. A lot of things have happened in that amount of time. And,
you've blown up for one.
Well, I don't know about that. I wouldn't say I've blown up, but, maybe around the waist a little bit.
And you're not alone.
Yeah. So you sent me an email. You're like, hey, man, let's talk. I got another good deer story for you. And let me ask you a question. Once your kids left the house, okay, and you were empty nesters again, did your hunting pick up a little bit?
I would say it did. Yeah. I definitely would, because, you know, to your point, you're living this life. I mean, you're not transporting them everywhere for some event on weekends. You're not having to you're taking into consideration one less life that you're having to plan around, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's, and so the reason I ask that is because obviously everybody wants to hunt as much as possible, but I do want to say that once the kids leave the house, basically what it sounds like is there is hope for you to get back into hunting a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the scouting aspect and the things around not just actually getting out during the season, that's where I really noticed the bigger impact is my ability to do the off season work a lot more easily.
Yeah. That's great. I don't want to say I'm ever looking forward to anything, but my schedule is so busy. I wouldn't mind if the schedule relaxed a little bit, you know, once September hits in the years. But again, that's impossible because three kids, three or four or five activities, depending on how many they're in. And it just like, it's just, I have to plan out absolutely every trip I take, everything. There's no more shooting from the hip anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, if there's any change in the plan, it's not because you made it. It's because the family had something changed.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, like I said, you reached out to me. You said you got a cool deer story that you wanted to share. And over the last couple of years, how have your seasons been?
They've been good. I've killed every year. We're a one buck state here. And to refresh your memory, I've got a buddy down in Texas that I always go hunt with every year. And sadly, he sold his place last year. So last year was the first year that I hadn't been down there, like in the last 11.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of a change. But basically, he came up and hunted with me, which was kind of cool. Yeah. And Hope Springing Eternal, he's looking at a new piece of property in Oklahoma about an hour and a half north of where he lives. So I'm fingers crossed he buys that. So I'll be making that trip again.
Down to Oklahoma, huh? Or in Texas again?
He's in North Texas. He lived outside of Dallas. So this other place that he had was about an hour and a half from where he lives, and the Oklahoma place would be about 2 hours. So it's not far because he's pretty close to the border up there.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Cool. How many acres do you own?
I don't own any.
Oh, don't own any. Permission.
Yeah. I've had three farms that I have permission on and two smaller parcels that are not really urban, but they're outside of town. So I've got five spots along with the public hunting I do out at Fort Knox, which is really kind of a cool place too. So that's where I have this. Yeah.
How many acres is the biggest piece that you have access to?
600.
600. Do you share that with other guys?
Yeah, I've got three farms that me and nine other guys, and they're all from out of state. I'm the only one here local. These are all within half an hour of my place. Most of them are rifle guys. We've only got a couple that actually bow hunt consistently. So for bow season, I pretty much have access to all three of those farms more so than anyone else, and sharing them maybe with two or three other guys.
Gotcha. Okay. And then are you allowed to do any type of habitat improvement on those pieces?
Not much. And there's two components to why. The major component is they're all ag. Okay. And I would say out of the three farms, one of them is maybe 20% woods is the highest amount. Now they're big enough that there's little spots and pods of woods where it holds deer. So you can get on deer there, but reality is there's not a ton of woods. So within those woods, he doesn't care what we do.
Yeah.
But to this point, really any kind of work we're doing to that end is primarily just access and clearing out some bedding areas, like doing some hinge cutting and stuff like that to make it a little bit better bedding area. So we can't, we can throw put out a little bit of like a throw and grow kind of thing in a corner, mm-hmm. but basically anything that's tillable, you know, this, I mean, where you live, they're on it, you yep. know, I mean, they're not leaving you a lot of space. So yep. that's the limit of what we can do.
Yeah. There's a couple things that I've really wanted to play around with. And actually I did make a phone call to one of the landowners that I have. And I said, hey, listen, how would you feel about me doing a little hinge cutting of some scrub mm-hmm. trees, like the honey locust, which has all the thorns on it, and the right. And an Osage orange tree. And yes, there is some value to those trees, but for yeah. the most part, it's a lower value tree. It's scrub, right. it's pasture ground that's been grown up. There's multiflower rows and all of it. Anyway, so I reached out to the landowner. I'm like, hey man, what do you think about me helping improve the wildlife habitat on this farm by doing some hinge cutting? Mm-hmm. And then I made a list of all the benefits, right? Like,
right.
like sunlight, you know, ground nesting birds, you know, songbirds, more vegetation for animals to eat lower to the ground, because the place that I hunt, I'm not going to say the deer density is extremely high, but it's high enough to where on this little strip where all the deer tend to congregate, from about 6 foot down towards the end of the summer, you can see through the timber because there's
yeah,
so
yeah, probably.
Yeah. And so there's no real understory. And so what mm-hmm. I'm trying to propose this to him, and he goes, hey, this all makes sense. I'm not familiar with it. It all makes sense though. Let me ask the other people who I own the property with if they have mm-hmm. any issues with it. And then, so it's still up in the air. Right. The other thing that I'm considering is, instead of planting food plots, mm-hmm. I'm curious if I could talk with a person that farms the ground to leaving standing corn or standing beans in some place on the farm.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that, you know, looks like. Hinge cutting's cheap. I can borrow a chainsaw, and I can, right. you know, and I can do the work myself. Leaving standing crops up is going to be more expensive, a couple thousand dollars for an acre. I don't even know what the bushels per acre is and who, right. who would do it, but that's a little, do you guys do any of that?
We asked for that. We went to the landowner on those three farms, same guy owns all three of them, and asked him if, you know, he would leave some, and he said, no, we're not going to do that. And it's a good guy. But basically I think it's just a more of an issue of him being able to dictate to the guys with the combine, say, leave this part out.
Yeah.
You know, having to communicate that with them, because those people are, you know, such seasonal workers, and they're just wanting to go in and get done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so yeah. more trouble than it's worth, even paying him the money that he would get on it. He just didn't want to hassle. So I was frustrated, because I was hoping we could do that too.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, you think about it, it's not just leaving it up. At the end of the year, right. it's mowing it down and then tilling it under again, which, you're paying for that cost, but then there's still other costs associated with it, like diesel fuel and straight up time, too. So,
yeah.
So let's get into this story about this buck that you wanted to share. And I think let's just start with, what year did this story start?
Good question. I'm 90% sure that I had him on camera as a 2-year-old.
Okay.
Now, he wasn't, you know, he didn't really look that like much then, right?
Right.
But I know for sure, not this last season, I killed him this last season, but the year before, I know I had him.
Mm-hmm.
He was a mainframe 10, and nothing really, in my area, anything, or if you're hitting anything that's poking younger better, That's a good year.
Yep.
That's a good year. We're not Iowa, obviously.
Yeah.
But basically, 2 years ago, I saw him, and he was, you know, that didn't have much mass. He was a 10 point, and he looked kind of sickly, you know, not like an EHD or anything, but just kind of thin.
Yeah.
And long face and everything. And then the more pictures I got, the nighttime pictures I got from him, he'd had an eye taken out.
Oh.
So he'd lost it. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe he's got an infection or whatever. And, you know, he's around. He's not like a total homebody, but during the rut, he was pretty consistent and seemed pretty regularly. And frankly, I wasn't sure whether or not he was going to make it through.
Okay.
Yes. And, And by any stretch, I didn't really think that he was going to be anything. I didn't see anything in him that he was going to be anything special for our area.
Yeah. Describe the terrain that this buck was living in when he was a two-year-old, and if that changed at all as far as his location is concerned, maybe with crop rotation in mind, or right, if there was any like shift in his core area as he started to get older.
Sure. So the area that I shot him in is actually the same area that I shot the last buck you and I talked about.
Okay.
It's not a farm. It's a guy that has about 20 acres. He has a house in the front of it, and behind it, there's an area that he mows of about 10 acres that he'll mow. And then there's a creek that runs from east to west. The creek probably has water in it about half the time. It's lined with, there's some sycamores down in the bottom of it. There's hickories and there's red oaks. And then on the other side of the creek, there's a big CRP of about 15 acres behind.
Okay.
So
how was he moving in through all this terrain?
Well, the neighbors to the west, there's a huge CRP, probably about 50 acres behind them. The guy used to farm it, but for whatever reason, he's not farming it anymore. And basically what I've seen is the deer are going to bed back in the CRP either to the west or to the south, and then they'll move down through that creek system from one to the other, and also to hit all those oaks, because there's a ton of oaks in there.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the area that they move in and around.
Gotcha. Okay. So food and cover is easy right there. They got enough food, they got enough cover, and
yep.
When you run feeders too, right?
Yeah. You can run feeders out here too.
Yep. Yeah. And so are feeders run on your property all year round?
Well, you could have, there was, the rules here in Kentucky have changed a little bit. The rules were that you could not run feeders during turkey season.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can't bait turkeys. But other than that, you could run a feeder all year round if you wanted to.
Okay.
Most people didn't. But we got our first EHD or our first CWD here. We joined the club back in the fall. And one of the responses that they had to that is they're going to limit the feeding till start in August.
Okay.
So beginning last year in anticipation, because we had some CWD on our southern border right in Tennessee, hadn't popped here yet, but in regulation for that, what they did is made it where we can only start feeding in August, and our bow season starts first weekend in September.
Okay. All right. So that kind of brings up a unique debacle, right? Because they feel that there was a CWD positive deer in Kentucky, and so that drove them to change the law on baiting. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
But and the reason, and I'm going to start throwing assumptions out there, and you just tell me correct or not.
Okay.
The reason they're doing that is so that deer when they come to congregate, they're not doing it all year round, right? At a location that congregates animals.
Right.
But it kind of defeats the purpose in a way if you can bait during the time the deer are the most social, if that makes sense. So as someone who uses a feeder, what are your thoughts on baiting? And is it truly like if I don't bait, then I won't have any deer on my property? Or if the law changed and they got rid of baiting, would it impact you at all? Or would you have a problem with it?
Yeah, that's good questions. And to further look at the conundrum that you brought up, in addition, we can put minerals out all year long.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what you guys don't bait in Iowa, but we can bait here. And what I see on trail cameras is there's a hell of a lot more congregation of deer around mineral sites in proximity. And that's all year long.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying we should quit minerals, but, they're kind of trying to see in the dark in this. So I appreciate the efforts on it. I don't bait everywhere.
Yeah.
And generally I don't hunt over bait. We'll put feeders out to keep deer in certain areas. I didn't have any feeders at this location, just a small area, and I've got the oaks there, so I don't need them. They'll go to the oaks over the corn anyway, in my experience. But where we do have feeders, it's more about intercepting them, getting between where those feeders are and where the bedding is, as opposed to shooting them over the feeder. And here's another weird thing, too, is out on our farms, the guys that have been out there, I've only been on these places for three seasons. This is my third season. The feeders, they say scare the deer, and that's been their experience. So what they'll do is they'll take eared corn, and they'll throw it out during rifle season, and that's what they use for bait is eared corn. They'll take just, you know, big batches of that and throw it out.
Gotcha. Okay. Being someone who uses feeders, whether you hunt over them or not, if there was a law passed today, said no more feeders, would you care at all?
I don't know. I don't think it would. I think it would make the hunting different, but I don't think it would make it harder.
Okay.
I really not for. I mean, I think it'd make it harder for the rifle hunters.
Yeah.
Because basically in these big ag areas, I don't know how it is where you are, but you know, they've got the box stands that they build up and they throw that corn out there and the deer are coming to that. I think that kind of hunting where they're getting these deer that come out that first weekend of rifle season, because half of our deer in Kentucky that are taking the entire year are taking the first weekend of rifle.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's an Armageddon on them. After that, the deer know what's going on and they're staying in the woods.
Yeah.
And the baiting doesn't work as well. I mean, you get does to come out there with the bucks after the first weekend of rifle. But to answer your question, would it make it more difficult? Yes. Would I be upset about it? No, because it's really, if it's better for the resource, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I look at some of these states, like didn't Kentucky recently, they're playing with the issue of banning cell cams.
No, we're not one of those states yet, but, I've seen the, I'm retired now, so I've got the time to do it. I'll watch the Fish and Wildlife meetings.
Okay.
They put them up on YouTube.
Yep.
So, that isn't something that we've done yet, but, with this new technology, I know you guys, I heard you and Mark and Tony talking about it a week or so ago on Mark's podcast. I think the live technology is what's going to drive cell cams just being outlawed.
Yeah. Awesome. Let's see here. I'm looking at right here. So I'll have to do a little bit more research. Kentucky Senate Bill 3.
This is true.
What's that all about?
Well, what that is they are trying to take the Fish and Wildlife, which has been a standalone agency, and place it under the agriculture.
Yeah, no thanks.
And, I mean, we are fighting, and anybody that's listening to this, if you haven't done it yet, please go on to one of the websites that promote reaching out to your legislators, because our legislation here is doing a great job on a million things, but they are screwing the pooch on this one bad.
Yeah, you definitely, there's two complete different goals with wildlife and agriculture, two completely different goals. And so that, in my opinion, those have to be separate. Okay. Let's get into back to the story. We got derailed there for a little bit, but all right. So this buck is living in some ag timber CRP mix type of environment.
Right.
You said you first noticed him as a 2-year-old. What year was that?
That would be 2021.
2021 as a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as that year came and went, did you think about this buck at all, or did you just kind of put him on the back burner or not?
I kind of put him on the back burner even the next year when he was a 3-year-old, because there's two components. One, he was kind of sickly looking. He had the bad eye, and he wasn't the best buck I had on this property.
Right.
I had another 10 that was probably mid 130s.
Okay.
And a year older than him. And, you know, just a really healthy, nice, looking, good looking buck, and one I'd be really, really happy with. So he was what I was focused on that property, that not last season when I killed him, but the year before.
Gotcha. Okay. And so I run into this issue too, where I'm just like, oh, great young deer. And then you don't think about them. And then maybe you get a trail camera picture. And for me, I slide them into a folder.
Right.
And I don't check it. Right. Until I eventually shoot a deer, and then I go back and I check all my old trail camera pictures. Hey, what right. do I got for pictures of this deer? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so even as a three-year-old, what was he sitting at as a three-year-old?
I'd say he was probably like 115, 120.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
115, 120. And
yep.
I mean, obviously the quality of deer where you're hunting, that's still a back burner buck.
Yeah. I mean, if there wasn't that other really good buck there, by my standards at 135, nice, healthy looking buck, he was where my focus was. So if he hadn't been there, I might've been tempted to shoot this buck. But because he was there, I was on to the other one.
Right. As a three-year-old, was he running the same area?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting. This will dovetail into the next stage of it. He wasn't – our season, again, it starts first weekend in September. Mm-hmm. And we eat a lot of venison. So generally what I like to try to do is the first part of the season, unless I've got one that's showing up consistent – I'm going to try to get a doe or two down early before pre-rut, right?
Right.
So I'd seen him. I knew that he made it through. And not only did he make it through, he looked a lot better. He was pushing. He was 140-ish now.
Okay.
But he wasn't, you know, consistent to the point where I'm like, okay, I need to move in and get on him. Gotcha. I saw him probably twice in August.
Yeah. Okay. And still – There's no need to move in on them because you have other bigger, more mature bucks that you're chasing.
Yeah, and he just hadn't been consistent, which is kind of the way it works out there. Until the acorns start dropping really hard, then you might see him. But even when the acorns started dropping late August, he wasn't showing up consistently.
Yeah.
And so I was in there primarily just wanting to shoot a doe.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me ask you a question. Across Iowa, we haven't had a ton of water, and from what I understand, that can impact the oak harvest or the oak drop. Have you guys had a pretty consistent oak drop throughout the last couple of years, or have you guys had any drought conditions?
Well, we haven't really had too much of a drought issue here.
Okay.
So I haven't really noticed much of an impact on that.
Okay. So oaks are consistent every single year.
Well, my understanding, at least, is on our red oaks, they're in every other year, right?
Right.
And white oaks are annual. This place has two really good white oak trees that, I mean, there's other white oaks, but there's two that are really big, and it just rains.
Yeah.
And we had a really good oak production that year.
Okay, cool. All right, so this buck, I mean, as this, he made it through the season as a three-year-old, obviously. Did you find his sheds, or do you guys go looking for sheds at all?
I do look for sheds, but this property is so small that I've never really had much luck finding the sheds on it. I don't think they'll bed around there some, but I don't think that's their main bedding area. All that big CRP on the neighbor's place to the west is primarily where they bed. And guy's a nice enough guy, but I don't go over there shed hunting or asking for permission to that.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. So when do you run trail cameras all year round?
Start generally in April and run through the end of the season. Our season ends Martin Luther King Day.
Okay.
So I take about 3 months off.
Okay. All right. So anyway, you get him as a three-year-old, you know him. The eye, you know, he's looking skinny, you know, probably still think he's not going to make it through a hard winter or whatever. And then he comes back as a four-year-old. When was the first time you got a picture of him as a four-year-old?
Well, I started getting pictures of him, and bad for him, good for me. It's so easy to see if you've got a one-eyed buck, right?
Because
the nighttime pictures, you know, they don't catch the reflection. So as soon as I started running cameras, not that he was so consistent out there, but over time I would see him pop through. So I knew he'd made it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Probably the early May.
In May. Okay. And yeah. So as May, you get these pictures of May, you're saying, he's back on the farm. As the summer progressed and his headgear started to grow, what did something change? Did he start looking healthier, bigger body, anything that said, okay, all right, I see you?
Yeah, so he looked healthier. He always had a long, he had a long face. You know, some deer's face seems longer or whatever. And part of that, I think, was because he was getting mature too, but it wasn't like the Roman nose that you get, but his face was just more like an elk as far as a long face. But to your point on the antlers, you know how it is when they're in velvet, they all look huge. But I could tell, man, he did not look like he was going to be the same. So I was really, really hopeful when I was getting those early pictures. And as we, you know, as we progress and we get into August, you know, they're pretty much where they're going to be before they strip the velvet comes off. And I thought, man, this guy, he's going to be, you know, for this area, he's going to be exceptional.
And so a 4-year-old where you're at, that's a shooter. Is that a shooter?
Oh, for sure. And especially, you know, anything around here, if you're doing the Pope and Young Buck, that's good every year. I mean, I'm happy if I get a Pope and Young every year.
That's the same thing with Iowa. You know, everybody, the real big land managers who have the acres to pass, you know, 150 inch 4-year-olds, you know, good for them, but I can't do that. You know, like I'm that guy where if I will shoot 150 inch deer every single year, given the circumstances that I have right now,
Right, of
you know,
course, yeah.
but it, you know, it would be nice to someday pass a 4-year-old knowing that he's going to stick on the farm that you have. And there's deer that, you know, there's deer that make it through every single year to get to 5-year-old, and they're definitely on the top of my hit list. But when, like this year, when that 4-year-old came walking by and he's that high 140s, low 150s, you know, I still haven't measured him, but you see him coming through the woods and you're just like, I'm taking this opportunity because I have no
It's the
idea what's going to
best.
happen if I let him walk. So,
Oh, yeah.
And so as summer turns to fall and he starts to strip, what was he sitting at as far as headgear was concerned as a 4-year-old?
About 140. I guessed in 100, right about 140, which in Kentucky, that would be my personal best.
And that
So
was with a bow,
I'm
right?
excited. Yeah, right. I only bow. That's all I like to do.
I'm looking at this buck behind you.
Yeah.
What's that one score?
That's him.
Oh, that's him?
Yeah. That's
Okay.
he's yeah, he's a 142.
Okay, for all this angle, he
Yeah.
looks huge for where I'm sitting at. 142, he looks like 152.
Yeah.
That's a great buck. Okay, so this makes it awesome. I can see exactly. We're looking at a clean 10 pointer, amazing brows. What are those, 6 inches? 6 inch brows?
Yeah. And he carries the, you know, he's not the only thing that kept him from really getting big is his inside spread is not huge, but he carries the mass out on every one of the tines and just kind of a cool buck, I think.
I'd have to see pictures of him on the hoof, but I'll tell you this, if that buck walks through the woods, it would be very hard, close to impossible for me to pass him. Because
That's how I felt.
that's a great looking deer. Okay. Strips his velvet. Was he consistent enough on trail cameras throughout August and September to the point where you're like, hey, maybe I can make a move on him early season?
Not at all, and I mean and that's not unusual for this parcel. Usually it doesn't heat up till pre-rut. I mean, though you get one that runs through. The only other reason that you might see them, and it's primarily at night, is when those acorns start dropping.
So just a lot of nocturnal movement through September.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so they're there, but they're just not moving during daylight.
Yeah, that's pretty much been my experience there.
On this farm where he lived, did you notice an uptick in sign that year, or do you, on this particular piece of property, is it kind of one of these deals where you shoot or one of your other buddies shoots the mature buck and then it's just kind of a next in line thing? And was this buck like the big dog of the farm then?
Yeah, so this is on one of the smaller properties that only I have access to. This isn't on one of the farms I share. And the thing about this is being a smaller property and everybody that hunts them you know, deals with this, I only have a north access. The only way that I can get in there is from the north. So I'm limited, and where the best stands are on this, the best travel routes in these oaks. I'm limited primarily to a south or a southwest wind.
Yeah.
East wind doesn't really work. I'm sorry. I'm limited to a south or a southeast wind. The west wind doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. So not only is it small, but I'm kind of limited on when I can go hunt it to be able to not get busted.
Yeah. That's 100%. You just described the property where I shot my buck this year. I can only access it through a gate opening on the southeast side of the property. And I have to have north winds are tough. South winds, mm-hmm. southwest winds, west winds are preferable. Anything out of the east, it gets real tricky. Although I killed my buck on the east wind this year. I found a really good access route in. It's invasive, but I felt like it was necessary at the time.
Yeah, it's worth the gamble.
Yeah. So I completely understand having limitations on where you can hunt. That frustrates me the most. Is having a property with limited access, and then the access is limited, which means that the wind direction, it's not a huge property, right? It's only an 80-acre piece, and I can only access it through the southeast. It's just tough because you walk in and you're in it, like, automatically. Yeah. So there's just so much intrusion right there, which... I've had to learn to just accept the fact that I'm going to bump something coming into that farm every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. This one's really good. If I'm on the right wind, I can get in and get out without messing anything up, which is really fantastic, especially on evening hunts. Sometimes if I'm going to hunt the morning there, I might bump some does or something, but evening hunts, if the wind's right, it's bulletproof. It's
right.
Great.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so September, what date did you kill this buck?
September 26th.
Oh, September. So it was early season. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. September 26th. So did you have him pegged? I mean, did you from cell cam or were you running cell cams?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but this property didn't have a feeder, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Right. No feeder. You were running cell cams. Was he caught on multiple cameras at this point?
I only run one camera on this particular place because I've hunted it so long. I know where the acorns are and I know where they come through.
Yep.
So I've kind of got that triangulated down. It's not so big of a property that I need them everywhere, especially knowing that he doesn't bed on the property.
Right.
If he bedded there, I've got to put up more cameras.
Gotcha. Okay. And so as this buck, you know, is going through the property, was he pretty consistent on trail camera to the point where you're like, hey, man, it's getting close to make a move time?
Yeah, it's so funny because every buck, it seemed like, before this last season, that's the process, right?
Right.
You wait, you get them, you show, you're seeing them daylight, you're seeing times, and it's consistent enough, and you know which wind they're coming in on. You're like, you know what, it's time to move.
Yeah.
But like I was saying earlier, that wasn't the case here. Mm-hmm. I was going in there just to shoot a doe.
Right.
And I wasn't anticipating seeing him. I'd had maybe one daylight picture of him in the last 3 weeks. The rest were at night, and even the nighttime, you know, it wasn't like he was like clockwork coming in there. It'd probably be once every 3 to 5 days.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Was there a weather event that happened on this particular hunt that was like a no brainer? I got to get in the woods, or was this just, I think I'm going to go kill a doe tonight.
That's great. And that's kind of preface to what's going to happen after I shoot him, but there wasn't a weather event coming. I mean, happening right before I shot him, but there was one coming right after I shot him.
Okay.
So we had a bunch of rain coming in and I wanted to go in, you know, I've got about a 25 yard setup to where I'm shooting these if they come in the area that they generally come in. So I didn't feel really concerned about the rain that was coming.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But I get a good shot on him. Be no big deal, but I was just going in for a doe.
Yeah, and so because you've hunted this property for so long, you kind of had the deer movement down to a science at that point.
I think so. I mean, it's pretty consistent where they're coming through, and it's small, so I know where to look for them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So as you know, you get into this hunt, you get into your stand, the rain is coming, which typically results in a temperature drop, you know, for the most part, whether it's sure. major or minor, there's a little bit right. of a temperature drop. And so that tends to have deer get on their feet and start to feed, yep. and, you know, at the beginning and at the end of these weather events. And so when you're going in there for this doe, did you have a thought in your head that was like, yeah, I'm going in for a doe tonight, but with this weather coming in, he might mm-hmm. get up on his feet early? And was he on your mind as you were sitting in the stand hunting?
Not really. Just hadn't had enough consistent pictures of seeing him come through. And frankly, I didn't think I'd see a buck. But you know how this is, at least this is my experience. Anytime I'm trying to get on does, all I see are bucks.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Yep. And the flip side too, you know, you're out there trying to get on a buck and a million does are coming through. So that, I didn't expect to see him, especially, and this was early. Yeah. It wasn't super early, but probably, 30 minutes before sundown.
Okay. All right. And so 30 minutes before sundown, he shows up. Did any other deer show up before him?
Yeah. So, no does.
No does.
I'm in there. I get in probably about 4 o'clock because that's when the does generally start showing up, this time of year. So I get in the stand. No does, wind's perfect. I'm like, man, I can't believe it. I mean, you can actually hear the acorns dropping. I mean, they're everywhere. So, I mean, it's conditions are right. And a 2-year-old buck comes down creek beds. I'm sitting back about 25 yards from where I'm ultimately going to shoot him. And down below that, there's a creek bed. And to the left, coming down from the east, here comes a 2-year-old buck kind of on the wood line. Walking towards it. And as he's coming down, you know, he's doing what he's doing, not a big hurry or whatever. And he starts to feed on acorns, and he kind of gets nervous because I'm watching him, and he looks back up where he came from. And then there's the 10 up about 150 yards.
Okay.
Back up the tree line.
Okay. Kind of a weird question. When you're walking into this farm, How are you accessing this stand location? Like, yeah. What wind do you need? What's the access route look like?
I need a south wind. I can deal with southeast or east wind. I can't deal with a north or a northwest wind. Okay. West wind's kind of iffy. So how I access it is there's a road at the front of the property that I can walk in. It's about a 250-yard walk. I go down a tree line that's to my west that borders the property on that side, which intersects with the east to west running creek and the trees around it.
Gotcha.
So I'm walking right down that tree line. I've never bumped any. I've never seen any deer to the west or to my right. So as long as I've got the wind in my face or coming from my left, I feel pretty comfortable. And that was the situation that night.
Okay. So you look at this buck, he gets nervous, you look up the hill, and there's your target.
Yeah.
And were you kind of taken by surprise that you didn't see any does and that, of course, it's all bucks, and then your number one buck shows up?
Oh, I was blown away. Yeah. And that was the first time I'd seen him on the hoof. And, you know, I've had a couple of pictures of him, and I knew he was good size, but, man, I was just like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm just like you're talking about. I'm excited. Like I was, and it's coupled by generally I've got a pretty good idea. Hey, I'm going in on this buck. I anticipate seeing him here. I'm planning to see him here.
Yeah.
And that was not the case. I was just like, I can't believe he's here.
Right.
That early in the season. And I was just blown away.
Yeah. So once you look and you identify, yeah. what goes through your head?
Okay, so at that point, he's about 100, probably closer to 100 yards. And as he's coming down from left to right, from east to west, if he goes to where they all go, there's a large overhanging branch that still has plenty of leaves on it because it's early enough in the season that he's going to walk behind before he gets to where they feed on these acorns in this little area.
Okay.
So I know as he's coming down, and he's making a beeline. I mean, he's not running or anything, but he's not screwing around. He's just walking straight. And I'm like, okay, here he comes. So what's going through my mind is when he passes behind this branch, I've got a perfect opportunity to come full draw. He'll pop out. He'll be about 25 yards all over but the crying at that point.
Yeah, okay. And so you saw him and instantly started running scenarios in through your head saying, hey, he's on him. He's not necessarily running or jogging, but he's on a mission. He's just walking in this straight, consistent line. And you had a good idea of where the shot was going to take place.
Yeah, I really did. And the other buck that was there that looked up at him, saw him coming this way, he basically bolted down into the creek. He didn't want any part of him because we know he's a fighter because he lost his eye, right? Yep. So he's kind of the bully of the neighborhood, obviously.
Gotcha. Okay. So did he do that?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So he keeps on this line. He's coming from my left to my right. Textbook goes behind the branch, probably about a 10, 15 foot branch right down 25 yards from me that he's walked, that blinds him from me, hides him from me. I come back, and right as he's getting ready to come out from behind the branch, he stops. I have no sign of his visual, of his vitals. I can't even see his head. He stops back there.
Did you already draw back?
Okay. My plan was, as soon as he goes behind there, especially given the rate that he's going, I can draw and he'll never even see me move. Mm-hmm. Now, in hindsight, I could have drawn and have drawn there before without that, but it was just too perfect a situation. He's moving at the right speed. He's only going to go another 15, maybe 10 yards from this side where the branch blocks it off to where he goes and sits on these acorns where they all feed. And he stopped. Yeah. And I'm there. So I'm holding and I'm holding. And you know how it is. I mean, it felt like it's 5 minutes, but it was easily 1 or 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm holding, and he doesn't move, and there's no other deer there. My wind's fine. He doesn't pick up. He can't pick up any movement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just impossible. I mean, it's literally all but having a big sheet dropped in front of me with these leaves. He can't see. And I didn't move from the standpoint of herky jerky or anything. I'm still being really slow. And so whatever, he held up and he held up and he held up. He finally steps out, shows me the vitals. I've been holding a lot longer than I want to hold. I'm 65 years old and it's 3 years. After about 2 minutes of holding that sucker, you know, so he steps out, I release and I hit him back.
Okay.
Yeah, I hit him back. Maybe some liver, definitely guts.
Okay. Yep.
And I'm sick. And it's a good, I mean, and not only that, I don't get a pass through. I've got a lighted knock. Mm-hmm. He jumps. He runs down into the creek. And as it's getting closer to dark. And when you're down in that creek and I'm far enough away, I can't, it's dark down there, right?
Right.
Can't really see, but I can see this knock. And so he went down to the creek. He goes to the right where he would be going into the neighbor's property. And he's just standing there like they do when they get gut shot, right? Don't just haul ass off. And I'm watching that knock. And I'm like, go down, go down, go down. He doesn't go down. And he moves off. And I'm sick, man. You know the feeling. I'm just sick.
I do.
And so he's going to wander off over there. I know not to do, you know, I know not to go bump him. I know not to look at anything. I can't go look at the arrow because it's in him. I wait about half an hour, and I have the Kentucky bow hunting group is pretty tight knit around here. And I know I'm fortunate. I know a few people. One in particular, she works for Fish and Wildlife. She's not a game warden, but she works for them and she's a tracker.
Okay.
And I know her personally. And, had called her before to track for a friend of mine one time. And I called her, tell her the story and everything. Meanwhile, while we're talking, rain's coming, starting to rain.
There it is.
Yeah. I call her. She's at work. She's got another track job already for that night. She will come and meet me before she goes to work at 6 in the morning. And I'm I feel horrible. Not only did I make a bad shot, now we've got the rain. She can't get out there. I can't get a tracker on it until the next morning. It's going to rain all night. And I mean, this isn't just a little rain. It's a lot of rain.
Yeah.
So I'm sick. In anticipation, I called the guy, the landowner that's next door, that the direction he went. He was great. Gave me permission. I said, I'm going to have a tracking dog come out. We may need to walk over there. He said, no problem. And it's huge, huge CRP. It's like over your head. I'm 6 foot tall and you're walking through it. Now, I haven't been in it yet, but I know it. I can look at it and see it, right? So I'm just whatever. So the bad news is she shows up the next day and her regular tracking dog, they use a lot of dachshunds.
Okay.
Believe it or not, they're really good. And her dachshund had been injured and has unable to work. She had a new bloodhound, Sheba, that she was training. And I told her, gave her all the information, everything. She comes out and it's still raining, but it's not raining as hard. It's manageable.
Yeah.
Sheba comes out, this bloodhound, works the whole area, can't find it. Can't get on it.
Yeah.
Goes around in circles. And we've got coyotes out there. Everybody has coyotes. It's very likely he gets bumped by a coyote. And I'm like, oh, I cannot believe this is happening. And, but she knew another gal, had a dog that actually got her into it. Mm-hmm. And, her name's Natalie Spaulding, really good tracker, all over social media, really knows her stuff. Didn't know that much about her till then. Call her. She lives an hour and a half away. She will come. And you know, these people, I don't know how it is where you are, but these people, most of them, they do this for like tips.
Yep.
You know, this isn't a job for them. I mean, this is something that's a passion that they do. And she said, look, I'm be working. I can meet you tonight at 9 o'clock, you know, after dark at this place. Meanwhile, it's, you know, we're pushing 48 hours, right?
Okay.
From when the buck was shot, it's been raining the whole time. Just the worst case scenario. So she gets there. I meet her. We've got our rain gear on. We're walking out and her dog goes out, circles, find some stuff, hits what she calls a scent pool. I know more about this than I did before because I've dealt with it.
Yeah.
Hits this scent pool, gets lost, goes around, goes three different loops. This is an hour and a half in, and I'm just like, this is not happening. I can't believe it. She says, I think we're going to hit it one more time. She's getting closer. She says, you stay here at the hit site, and because I'd been following them around. So she goes. About 15 minutes later, I get a phone call, and she says, we got your buck.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. So from where you shot him.
Yeah.
To where this dog found him. How far was it?
600 yards.
Six. Okay. All right. So a good little poke.
Yeah.
Was he still in good condition or did the coyotes get to him?
Yeah. Coyotes ate him up. Yeah. Oh, at the hit site. All in the gut shot area was all eaten up. Couldn't salvage any of the meat. Plus, it's September. It had been warm, too.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm excited. I'm pissed off. All of the above,
yeah.
You know, because the last thing you want for any animal, much less, you know, one like this, is to not get the meat and not do your job. And I didn't do my job.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, if you care. That's tough, right? Like I care. And so when I hit my buck this year, the one that I didn't find, and then someone else shot, the second that arrow hit that deer, the first words out of my mouth were fuck. You know,
yeah,
I'm just like,
same.
Toast, you know, like yeah. I'm never going to see that deer again. My gut reaction. Now that was just a horrible shot, buck fever, the whole story. But I have had deer that I have center punched. And I've never found, I've had deer that I've center punched and I did find. And then I've had deer that I did find and could use the meat. And then I've had deer that it took 48 hours and I didn't get to use the meat. And so it's great when you find them, you feel relieved. But the thing that frustrates me the most is when I am unable, like I'm supposed to be good at this. Right. Like I should.
Yeah, how
I
much
should
time be, do we put into this?
Exactly.
Right?
I put a ton of time in it. And so I should, you know, and we all know that it's not nothing's guaranteed. But, man, if I can't use the meat, that pisses me off. And I feel like
Amen.
Shit.
It's just waste. You know, we've wasted an animal's life, an animal's usefulness. And, you know, we love having the antlers. We love having the mounts because of the memory it represents, not because of, hey, look at me. It's because of, and when you don't get to, when you don't do your job, or when I don't do my job and I don't get the meat out of it, I just, you know, it's very extreme mixed emotions.
Absolutely. It's definitely difficult to handle that, but you got him, right? Unfortunately, you weren't able to use the meat, but you got him on a wall. Great, great buck story. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm to the point, yes, I have a new farm and it's exciting for me because I'm still like it. My experience helped me figure this new farm out. My other farm, the excitement of the chess match isn't there as much because I know the farm very well now. Right. I've shed hunted it. What feels like hundreds of times. I got like 14, 15, 16 years on this farm, on my main farm. And I just don't, I don't get near as excited. There's certain parts of it that I don't get excited about because I know where they're moving. I know where I'm going to hunt. I know the access routes. Yeah. Right. So when I tell my stories, I'm just like, I went into this place that I've hunted several times before and I shot a buck. Right. And so the story, the stories are different now than what they used to be. And like, they're still fun. It's still exciting.
Yeah.
But part of what we do, what and why we do it is the story that comes out of it. And what I've realized is that sometimes these stories are not just all like publish worthy, if that makes sense. Right. It's like, I went in, I shot a buck, big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this one has a little last piece to it. That's kind of interesting.
Okay.
So, I told you that the hunting community, you know how it is. It's there's tight knit. And the guy that's my bow tech is also a good friend of mine.
Okay.
And he works for a place here that's kind of like a Cabela's, but it's local. It's called Kentucky Gun Company. And they've got a couple of really big places. Well, they run a contest every year, and I never entered it, never knew about it. I called him, we text, and I said, hey, man, finally found him, got this buck. And he actually knew the tracker, small community. And he said, hey, I'll enter in this contest. I said, what contest is this? Oh, we've got this Kentucky Gun Company contest that we run. And I said, well, I think he's only going to score, I think, maybe 140. They call it a big buck contest.
Yep.
Well, they give a winner for the best archery. They give a winner for the best rifle, the best women's, whatever. And then they have these random draws that they get things to. And he says, I'll put you in it. Go get it scored up here. They'll score it for you. He says, okay, fine. I do it. Don't think much about it. Then at the end of January, I get a call from him. He says, hey, what's up? So what's going on, Bryce? He said, guess what? I said, what? He says, you won the grand prize. So what's that? So you got a brand new Honda Rancher 24 ATV.
What?
$8,000 machine.
What?
And I won it randomly with this stupid buck, man, that I screwed the shot up on. Can you believe that?
That, dude, that's like, you have to relive every time you tell the story. It's like, yeah, I gut shot him and I wasn't able to find him for 2 days and I didn't get to use the meat. But I want an ATV out of the deal.
Yeah, so I'm not on naming bucks, but this is the Honda buck.
The Honda buck. Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And so are your properties big enough to use that thing on?
Yeah, so these, it's interesting. I already had one.
Oh, okay.
So these three farms, they're 600 acres each. And you know how it is with ag. You have to work around the ag. You can't just walk through corn. You can't walk through beans.
Yep.
So to use these until the crops come out, you pretty much have to have an ATV or a side-by-side to get around these properties. Gotcha. I'd never had one before I had access to those. So I bought a ATV when I got on these farms. But what's fun now, since I've got this other one, is the wife and I will go out and ride them when the crops are out. We'll go fish out of them and take them around. My grandson can go, my son, anybody else, and my buddy when he comes down and hunts with me. So we've got one each. So, I'm just Stupid lucky.
That's awesome.
Stupid lucky.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations, not only on the buck, but the fact that you won an $8,000 ATV out of the deal. So
thank you, sir.
Fun story. As always, yep. Tom, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this. And good luck this upcoming season, man.
I appreciate it. Good talking with you, Dan.